trouble now?
No.
He gave her a flat look.
But you will be if you go back there tonight. Or ever.
I have to go back there. She rolled her eyes, having to take two steps for every one of his. It's my room. And why are you saying this in front of the cameras? She tried to hurriedly whisper the last part.
To avoid rumors,
he whispered back before raising his voice again.
Besides, students have sleepovers all the time. He shrugged. I guess you just have to be on a permanent sleepover until summer break.
That's 2.5 months away, Theo.
That's better than a mile away.
What?
A mile.
He flashed her a tight smile.
That's how far Dorm A is from Dorm O. And what's with that big-ass beta following you around all the time?
Who? Crow? Why are you changing the subject?
Why are you changing the subject? Who the fuck is Crow, and why is he stalking you?
I can't sleep in your room. You only have one bed.
I'll sleep on the couch. Avoid my question again. I dare you.
She rolled her eyes, reaching for the bag hanging over his shoulder. He didn't release it.
Illy,
he warned lowly.
Theo.
She tried to mimic his growly tone.
That's it.
He suddenly switched direction, moving toward the path that would lead them around the opposite side of the lake to Dorm A. She followed him because he had her bag and because he couldn't possibly be forcing her back to his dorm if they weren't even walking toward it. Where are you going? She skipped ahead, trying to keep pace with him.
Dorm B.
He cast her a quick, hard look.
I can't use my alpha voice on you, but I sure as fuck can use it on Crow.
What? She forced her legs to pump harder. She was almost jogging. You can't use your alpha voice on me? Why? He slowed a little, the corners of his mouth downturned.
I don't know.
His forehead crinkled, his jaw working as he clenched his teeth together before he released all that tension with a sunny smile.
Doesn't seem right.
Then he was striding forward again, even faster than before.
You can come with me to Dorm B, or you can wait for me in Dorm A. Choose anything else, and you'll be punished.
Punished how? She slowed, her ankle twinging from practice, her voice raised to reach him.
You don't want to know. Oh, and Illy?
He turned, his phone pulled up, facing her.
I dare you not to tell them why you're there.
She groaned, coming to a proper stop to catch her breath. Theodore laughed as he turned back to the path, putting his phone away. The asshole still had all her stuff, but she had slipped her phone into the waistband of her exercise shorts before they left the training room, and was reminded of it when it vibrated against her skin. She slipped it out, tapping on the new message. Theodore,
make sure you film it.
After everything that had happened on the rooftop, she had almost forgotten about their plan to start an ongoing dare war online to cover up the real reason she had ended up in the middle of the lake one morning. Totally naked. This was his second dare for her, and she still hadn't thought of anything for him. They weren't allowed to post videos for 7 days after taking them, just in case they spoiled anything for the show. But Theodore's first dare had already gone live, and people were probably waiting for her to retaliate. She tucked her head down, marveling over how she managed to turn invisible again as soon as there were no alphas at her side. She dragged her feet a little as she made her way to Dorm A, pausing at the bottom of Alpha Hill when the nerves decided to rush through her body, making her hands shake. She curled her fingers into fists and marched up the stairs, pushing it all down and trying to assemble a cool, impassive expression. It didn't work in the slightest. She could feel the nervous arrangement of her features, the tremble in her lower lip, the forward hunch of her shoulders. She almost dropped her phone when she fumbled to turn on the camera, but managed to catch it at the last second, cursing quietly under her breath. She pushed into the dorm without knocking, because it wasn't going to be very entertaining if she stood outside and refused to tell anyone why she was there. She couldn't hear any sounds in the hallway as she crept toward the common room and was immensely relieved to find the lounge empty. She quickly sat on an armchair in the corner, propping her phone against the lamp table beside her so that it had a good view of her side profile
and the hallway leading into the common room. She briefly wondered if Theodore would arrive back before anyone else discovered she was there, but the thought was dashed as Spade entered the room. His damp, dark blonde hair was combed back from his angular face, not a single strand daring to flop over his forehead. He was wearing a soft cotton shirt and dark gray sweatpants with pristine white socks, and there wasn't a single droplet of water anywhere to be seen. He didn't look like a guy who had just finished showering. He looked like he had been prepped by a pedantic makeup artist to look like a model pretending to have just showered. His russet eyes landed on her instantly, and he stopped walking, his head tilting to the side. He seemed more surprised that he was surprised than surprised by the fact that she was there.
"Not often people sneak up on me,"
he noted, accepting her presence just like that. He glanced down at the notebook in his hand before setting it on the coffee table and seating himself in the long sectional against the window, just out of frame of her phone. She waited, but after a moment of staring at the notebook he had placed down, he seemed to decide that he wasn't willing to put aside whatever he had come out there to do. He swiped it up, opening it on his lap, and began to write on the page in a calm and measured way. She wanted to laugh. All the nervous energy about inviting herself into the Alpha dorm, and this was the reaction she got? She thought for sure they would have ordered her straight back out, or at least ask why she was there. A short sigh from Spade distracted her for a moment, and she glanced up to find him suddenly staring at her.
"Could you stop?"
He chewed on his pink lower lip, the movement drawing her eye for a moment. His nose was scrunched, the look in his eyes hard. He was bothered by something.
"Huh?"
she managed.
"Stop smelling so scared. I'm not the one you have to worry about, and I much prefer the sweet cherry smell."
She swallowed.
"What?"
Okay. I'll change how I smell." He opened his mouth again, but whatever he had been about to say was interrupted when Moses entered the room, a dark look on his face like he already knew she was there, somehow.
"What are you doing here?"
he snapped immediately, dark gray eyes drilling right through her.
"I don't know," she said.
Whatever he had been expecting, it wasn't that. His eyes widened, a flutter of panic brushing against her chest, reaching out to her from where he stood across the room.
"Ah."
Spade slapped his book shut, like he had just figured something out, but that was all he said. Moses glanced from Spade to her, his frown deepening. He picked up a game controller and fell into the seat furthest away from her, turning on the TV.
"This is a bit of a letdown,"
she mumbled to herself.
"What?"
Moses' dark glare slammed immediately back into her, making her shrink back in the armchair.
"It's another one of Theo's dares,"
Spade explained calmly.
"You didn't notice the phone?"
Moses' expression turned sour, roaming around her until he found where she had set up her phone. She expected him to explode or something, but he only let out a sharp sigh, some of the tension seeping out of his body.
"I thought..."
He shook his head.
"Moses is having an off day,"
Spade offered, still in that same calm tone.
"You'll have better luck with the next one."
"The next?" Isabel cut herself off as Sato strode into the room. His hair was also wet, the curls weighed down to trickle around his face, his shirt scattered with droplets of water. He froze a step into the room, his eyes fixing to her immediately. He cataloged her like he was searching for some kind of discrepancy. A spot the difference between who he saw now and the girl he had left at the family center a couple of hours ago. His nose twitched, much like Spade's had, and his gaze rested on her jaw for a moment too long. Had her father bruised her? His examination swept over to Spade, who was sitting there stiffly watching them all. Spade didn't so much as twitch an eyelid, and then Sato turned his attention to Moses, who just quirked an eyebrow in response. It was clear neither of them had invited her inside.
"Just let yourself in, did you?"
Sato growled. Did Theo want her to die?
I did.
She couldn't hold his eyes, dropping her attention down to her fingers instead. She wrapped them together in her lap, waiting for Moses to tell him it was a dare. But Moses didn't speak up.
So, you're one of us now?
Sato drawled, his voice dripping in malice. The way he switched up his personality so quickly was terrifying.
If that's true, then maybe you should prove it.
She was close to petrified. Oscar could smell it. He could almost feel it. He could definitely see the flush against her chest. It made his own heartbeat pick up, like her fear was breathing life into him. He knew that was fucked up, but he didn't really care.
I don't know what you mean.
Her voice was small. She was lying. Her eyes darted up for a second, just long enough to lock with his. Just long enough for a silent conversation to pass between them. He knew she was trying to get a room in their dorm. They all knew. But it wasn't just the officials she needed approval from. That was only the first hurdle. They wouldn't just accept anyone. Fuck. Normally, they quite literally wouldn't accept anyone. Under any circumstances.
It's time you proved yourself, he said quietly, drawing her eyes back to his.
He preferred it when she looked at him, even if that multicolored eye was a direct punch to his gut.
If you really want to be one of us.
Her slender shoulders lifted slightly, shrugging just a little.
Okay.
Something curled through his body. Something like hunger, or pride, or adrenaline. She was accepting his challenge, but his challenge was for her to run. She had no idea what she was saying yes to.
What do you want me to do?
She asked, leaning back and crossing her arms, tucking her fingers against her sides to hide the tremble in them.
I'll do anything.
Her scent gave her away. She smelled like spilled sap and crushed cherries, like someone had stomped through her fruit to hack at her branches. She was wounded and scared, and he wanted to retrace her steps to find out exactly what caused the change. What weighed on her shoulders and who the fuck put it there? He was also curious about the discoloration along her jaw that wasn't there before. It almost looked like fingerprints. She was his toy to play with. He was the only one who should be able to tease that sweet, crushed scent from her veins. He claimed her the minute he breathed air back into her chest. Not that he wanted her. He just didn't want anyone else to play with her.
We're all equal here.
He spread his arms, his lips twitching slightly as Moses rolled his eyes at the lie.
So we all deserve a chance to test you. You'll face a trial from each of us. Who would you like to go first? It can't be Killian.
He smiled slightly. Her chin inched up, and that was when he realized it. He was providing her distraction from her real issue. Whatever that was. And she was diving right into it. Chapter 5. Dare. Nico. Isabel mumbled the name, unsure. None of them were a great choice, except Killian. Even Theodore wasn't a good choice. He liked to challenge her. And he had a little current of sadism that ran just beneath his surface. Despite how much of a good person he was most of the time, he would probably like to make her squirm.
Nico.
Sato quirked a dark brow, doing that thing with his face where he managed to look amused without really changing his expression at all.
He pulled out his phone, tapping the screen quickly.
I've sent him your number. You'll get your first task soon.
Fine. She moved to the edge of her seat, debating how much longer she could keep this up before Theodore got back.
You definitely chose wrong, by the way.
That comment had come from Spade, who had picked up a controller to join Moses's game. He didn't seem to be trying to bait her. He wasn't even waiting for a response. He was just stating a fact.
This is boring.
Sato frowned at the screen. Moses sighed, throwing the controller aside.
I know.
Let's drink instead.
Sato disappeared and Moses got up to follow him. Spade picked up their discarded controllers, arranging them in one of the drawers below the TV set into the wall. Even from where she sat, it was obvious that he was arranging them in a very exact way. He made a sound of disgust, pulling a cord from the drawer and rolling it up. He opened another drawer of neatly arranged cords, returning it to its place before rubbing his fingers together like he suddenly needed to wash his hands. He glanced at his notebook, then at his fingers, his frown growing.
Are you coming?
He asked distractedly, his movements a little jerkier when he turned for the hallway, dismissing the notebook. She quickly turned off her phone, sliding it back into her pocket.
Do you want me to bring your book?
He stopped, narrowing his russet eyes on her.
Yes,
he said plainly. She picked it up and followed him, expecting him to go up to the rooftop, but he opened the door to his room and stepped inside, leaving the door hanging half open.
Put it on the desk with the others, please.
He disappeared into his bathroom and she entered his room, casting her eyes around. She had expected it to be clean, exact, but this was something else. He had a single pillow on his king-sized bed, exactly in the center, and pristine white sheets so fitted they looked like they had been pressed into place. No blankets. There were small, white, square sticky notes everywhere. Everywhere. They were arranged in perfect, ordered lines and groups. She swallowed, moving toward his desk, which was set up beside the window seat. It was far bigger than Theodore's desk, with two large monitors and three neat piles of notebooks, ordered by color and size. His desk had some sort of clear cover over it, and beneath it, the surface was a checkerboard of black and white sticky notes. She placed the notebook on the desk, turning her head to read the nearest note. Your hands are not dirty. And the next one? You do not need to wash your hands. She whipped her head up when she heard the sound of water running in his bathroom, and then decided to add the notebook to the pile with others of its size and color. She tried not to read any of the other notes, but stopped short at the sight of the back of his door. Down the very middle of a cloud of notes was a message, written one letter at a time on individual squares. You are not for sale. She frowned, stepping back out into the hallway. Not for sale. They were all for sale, begging the rest of the world to invest in them, fighting desperately against each other to be crowned the hottest commodity out of all the other commodities in training. Spade joined her in the hallway, closing the door to his room. He leaned against it for a moment, taking stock of whatever he could read in her face. He seemed to be having a conversation with her, without her direct involvement, and she tried to school her expression. His eyes switched between hers, settling on the multicolored eye that wasn't covered by her contact, before dropping to her mouth and then her chin. You're nice, he said lowly, almost a whisper. Lines suddenly furrowed into his brow.
Sweet.
Okay. She didn't feel sweet or nice. Her mother had been nice and sweet, a perfect Sigma. Isabel felt different. His lips twitched. It was weird to see him almost smile. It didn't look like it came naturally to him.
Careful.
His hand rose, long, graceful fingers hovering over her chest. And then he pressed his pointer finger forward, resting it against her shirt, over her heart.
Don't let them break this.
I don't think that's how it works. She scoffed a little, hoping he couldn't feel her heart skipping beneath the pad of his finger. He probably could. If we really had control over who had the power to hurt us, we would all be immaculate. He tutted like she wasn't understanding him.
If you let them, they will. They'll fucking consume you.
Who is them? His frown deepened, that finger tracing up to the neckline of her shirt, where it skirted along the seam.
Us,
he revised. You? She asked, confused. She wasn't used to having Spade's full attention. She wasn't sure he was used to giving it, either. She felt like a little speck beneath a microscope, something he was trying to classify, to categorize. Beautiful or ugly, useful or a waste, valuable or discardable, important or unworthy. Instead of answering her, he seemed to focus everything on his finger.
Try it now,
he suggested, the very tip of his nail slipping over the edge of her shirt to brush her skin.
Don't let me.
This was a test, a special Spade test. She knew it. Knew it by the sudden, calculated look in his eye. She just didn't understand what the test was, exactly.
Don't let me,
he repeated. And then his whole hand was against her skin, flattening to the very top of her chest, brushing up over her neck. He pushed her back into the wall beside his door, leaning his weight into her. His hair, now dry, smelled like linen, somehow. It brushed against her forehead as he drew her up by his hold against her neck. His eyes were detached, not warm and not cold. No offense, she rasped, standing on her toes, analyzing him right back. But you're not that scary. You don't look like you want it, you know? His lips twisted, his teeth flashing slightly.
I know. I don't want it. I don't want, period. Either I have something or I don't.
He released her suddenly, something gleaming in his eyes that wasn't at all calculated or detached. It was a spark of a promise, a whisper of something that didn't want to step into the light.
When I have something, I possess it entirely.
He began to turn away, but not before muttering something beneath his breath that she almost didn't catch. Something that sounded like, just me. He paused at the steps, looking back at her.
Are you coming?
Yes, I guess. She glanced back down the other end of the hallway. Still no Theodore. And it wasn't like she had anything better to do. So she hurried over to where he waited, that little spark still in his eyes.
Like a puppy,
he said, biting back a smile as he watched her.
Cute.
She frowned, partly insulted by the comparison and partly charmed by that unfamiliar spark of something he was letting her see. A little hint of a personality. A secret he usually kept under heavy deadbolt. Theodore was the last Alpha to find them on the rooftop. First, it was Ashford and Nico, who both came up freshly showered, Nico avoiding her eyes and Ashford reaching for the bottle of whiskey Sato had procured. Moses immediately snatched it back.
Play the game or get your own, he demanded,
to which Ashford only rolled his eyes and pulled up a seat. Nico also sat, but he did it silently, staring out over the edge of the rooftop.
Isabel didn't know how badly the rooftop had been damaged, but the officials had wasted no time writing it again. If it wasn't for all the new appliances and furniture, she might not have believed the storm had even happened.
Reed was next, and then Killian, each of them deciding to join in their game of truth or dare. It seemed to be the theme of her night, though the questions and dares were mostly surface-level and silly. Just a way for them to pass time. Until Theodore appeared.
"Where the hell have you been?" Ashford demanded. "I've been texting you."
Theodore ran his gaze over her, like he was checking to make sure she was okay before he turned to Ashford.
"Had something to take care of."
"I saw violence," Ashford growled. "You had me worried."
Theodore shot him a wide, disarming smile.
"But there was violence. Glorious violence."
Moses laughed, evidently enjoying his brother's more devilish side.
"Theo,"
Reed sighed, sharing a look with Spade.
"What?"
Theodore shoved a laughing Moses from the seat beside Isabel, claiming it himself.
"And what the hell are you all doing? Isabel was supposed to create drama, not whatever this is. Community engagement? Fun times?"
"I dare you to ignore him for the rest of the game."
Ashford slapped a shot onto the low circular table before Isabel.
"He's such an attention whore."
"Getting all the attention and wanting all the attention are two different things,"
Theodore grumbled, before glaring at Isabel.
"Drink that."
She nibbled on her lip, looking from him to the shot. She had just been doing whatever mindless dare they gave her. Drinking seemed more dangerous, considering what happened the last time she tried having a drink at Dorm A.
"Double dare,"
Sato grunted, slapping a second shot beside the first.
"Triple,"
Moses added, narrowly missing the punch Theodore aimed at his shoulder.
"Well, damn."
"Drink it,"
Theodore repeated, his voice like silk, his eyes tunneling into hers. She edged over on her seat, picking up the first shot. She sniffed it and then pressed the edge of the glass to her lips.
"Don't sip it, puppy."
Everyone turned to stare at Spade, faces registering astonishment and disbelief. Reed turned the slowest, his expression remaining blank, but he did turn to stare. Spade was just watching her calmly, that detached look back on his face.
"Swallow it all at once."
She did, throwing it back while all their attention was on him. She held his stare as she picked up the second shot and swallowed that one, too, her eyes starting to water, her throat burning.
"Puppy?" Reed finally questioned when it seemed like nobody else was going to.
Spade met his inquisitive look, and they did that weird talking without talking thing where they both just read each other's expressions and turned away, conversation over. Nobody else pressed him. She swallowed the third shot and then fiddled with her phone, drawing it out and turning the camera on Theodore.
"Dare you to,
she fumbled for a dare.
"Scent everyone in the room and rank them best to worst."
He stood immediately and then started stretching like he needed to warm up. He grinned, moving to Moses and sniffing dramatically around him.
"Sixth place."
He moved on to Reed.
"Fourth place."
"He's thought about this before."
Reed looked amused.
"He's way too confident."
"Normally, seventh place,"
Theodore announced when he got to Nico.
"But second if I'm having a bad day."
Several of the others laughed. Isabel didn't get the joke.
"Let me guess."
Sato held up a hand before Theodore could sniff him.
"Last place." "You got it."
Theodore moved on, waving his hands like he was trying to waft Killian's scent toward his nose.
"Third place."
He moved on to Spade.
"Fifth place."
And then to Ashford.
"Second place."
and a little jealous.
As you should be,
Ashford responded with a straight face. And then it was her turn, and she realized she should have thought this through a little better. She held up the phone higher, trying to use it as a barrier between them, but Theodore snatched it off her, pressing it down into her lap, the camera covered. And then his nose was brushing up the side of her neck, and the others were tensing, eyes narrowing on her like she was a bomb about to go off. She felt the warm brush of his breath against her skin, and her hands started to shake, making her grateful that she wasn't trying to hold up the phone anymore. Heat skittered across her skin and saliva pooled in her mouth as his scent wrapped around her. Hints of wood and musk and subtle sweetness.
First place,
he announced, drawing back, his pupils blown wide like he really did like her scent.
Congratulations, cherry girl.
He dropped back into his seat, pouring out a shot and slamming it down before Spade as Isabel scrambled to stop her phone recording.
Truth.
His voice was deeper than usual.
What is puppy supposed to mean?
Spade leaned back and shared another look with Reed. They both smiled tightly, and then Spade snatched up the shot and tossed it back. He took the cloth that he had apparently brought to the table with him and wiped the table before setting the glass back down. They were deliberately stirring up Theodore. They seemed to enjoy doing that. Spade filled up another glass and set it before Ashford.
Truth. What happened with the Sigma on your birthday?
This game is quickly getting out of hand.
Oscar happened.
Ashford's tone was short, his eyes hard on the unlit fire pit in the middle of the table. He didn't seem to be willing to explain further, and Isabel's hand itched to snatch up a glass.
Figured it out yet?
Sato chuckled darkly, his heavy gaze flickering to all the faces at the table. Several of them exchanged worried glances.
Most of it, anyway,
Reed answered. Ashford lifted his aquamarine eyes to her, some of the hardness cracking, revealing the curiosity swimming beneath.
She wasn't going to be able to escape that conversation for much longer.
Ashford passed his shot to Sato.
Pick a random number in your recent calls and tell them you know it was them.
Sato frowned.
I wanted to drink. But you want to do this more,
Ashford returned. Sato grunted out his agreement, pulling out his phone and scrolling for half a second before tapping his screen. The call sound rang around them after he hit speaker, and then a boy answered, his voice husky with sleep.
Sato?
I know it was you,
Sato told him calmly, his voice naturally low and rough, naturally terrifying. It was quiet on the other end before the boy swore, accompanied by the sounds of panicked rustling and items toppling over.
Listen, man, I swear to fucking God, whatever you think I did!
Sato hung up. The boy called back immediately, but Sato rejected it, dropping his phone into his lap, and then his eyes were on Isabel, settling on her face with a weight that had her stomach turning. He nudged the shot glass her way. Everyone tensed up again, but just as he opened his mouth, his phone rang a second time. Mikkel Easton flashed across the screen. His eyes returned to her after he accepted the call, and he watched her as he listened quietly to whatever Easton was saying.
I'll be right there.
He stood, reclaiming the shot and finishing it before wiping the back of his mouth with his hand.
I'm out.
He strode off without another word, and Isabel felt some of the tension leaving the stiff set of her shoulders. It didn't seem like the game was going to go back to harmless dares and questions, so she stood, glancing over at Theodore.
We're out to,
Theodore said, catching her look.
Later, guys.
Where are you going?
Moses asked,
the storm inside his eyes brewing as he switched his attention between them.
Nowhere. Staying here.
Theodore walked to the stairs, and she hurried to follow, surprised when Killian also stood to trail them.
She can't go back,
he started, but Theodore cut him off.
She's not going back to her dorm. She's sleeping here. Where?
Killian asked as they stopped in front of Theodore's room. Theodore pushed open the door and then turned, cocking a brow at Killian.
In my room? Why?
Killian's lips twitched in a smile that seemed a little forced. He tapped her shoulder lightly.
Come and jump in with me if you need to.
Theodore dragged her into his room.
She won't, but thanks for the offer.
He shut the door firmly in Killian's face and then sighed dramatically, giving her a bored look.
They think I'm desperately in love with you.
It's infuriating. Why aren't you? I find that infuriating. She bit back a laugh and sat on the end of his bed as he disappeared into his closet. He returned with a t-shirt and a pair of boxers, holding them out to her.
No, you don't,
he said as she reached for the clothing.
You can wear this tonight. I'll sleep in the lounge. I already got you a spare toothbrush. It's in the bathroom.
He lingered, refusing to let go of the shirt as the boxers slid onto her lap.
Something else?
She asked, emboldened by the whiskey. She didn't feel drunk. She was too aggravated to be drunk, too disturbed by the appearance of her father, too haunted by the idea of a mate out there in the world, waiting to take ownership of her. But the alcohol had calmed her a little, made things a little quieter in her head.
Yeah.
Theodore released the shirt, and his hands were suddenly either side of her thighs, sinking into the edge of his bed. His face hovered over hers, his heat and scent wrapping all the way around her.
It doesn't matter what they think. It only matters what you think. You believe I could never be a threat to you, right? You look so worried all the time. I don't want you to have to worry about me, too.
I don't think anyone worries about you, she admitted quietly. You're Theodore Kane. He rolled his eyes, inching closer. His head suddenly ducked to her neck, his forehead resting down, his breath scattering over her collarbone.
Give me a hug good night, Illy Stone.
She lifted her arms hesitantly, wrapping them around his shoulders. He didn't touch her back, but his head turned to the side, his nose brushing along the soft skin of her neck. It was weird, the way he made her hug him without really hugging her back. Distracted, she began to run her nails along his sides through his shirt. He shuddered, pulling back like his body suddenly weighed twice as much. His eyes were darker, but not like when he was fighting off ferality. This seemed like a warm darkness. A hot darkness. He blinked it away, dazzling her with one of his smiles before he turned and strode from the room.
Night,
he muttered before closing the door. She frowned, drifting over to it. She could still feel him, which was weird. Maybe it was the alcohol. But he was there, somewhere against her chest, like a soft brush instead of the usual pounding when she felt other people's negative emotions. She frowned, touching the door.
Caught yourself a Sigma?
Reed's voice sounded faintly through the door, and she quickly pressed her ear to it.
Yeah. Throw me a pillow, would you?
Theodore's reply was closer than Reed's, but still faint. He was right on the other side of the thick door. Sitting down, it sounded like.
I can just put a sensor on the door,
Reed offered after a few moments.
You don't have to guard her.
Something soft hit the door. A pillow, presumably.
They put a bomb in her room, Elijah. I'm not fucking moving, and nobody is getting into this room. Next person to come near her is joining Crow in the hospital. Crow?
That had sounded like spade.
Never mind. Throw me a blanket.
Her phone lit up on the bed, and she drifted over, opening the message. Killian.
You okay in there?
She took it into the bathroom with her to reply as she got changed into the clothes Theodore had picked out for her. Isabel.
I'm okay, but I'll need to go back to my room eventually.
Killian.
I'm with Theo on this one. Why is Gabriel calling you a puppy?
Isabel.
He told me to come and I came.
Killian.
Dot, dot, dot.
Isabel.
What?
Killian.
Dot, dot, dot.
Isabel.
Seriously, what?
Killian.
If I told you to come, would you?
Isabel.
I mean, I guess.
Killian.
Go to bed.
She set the phone aside and noticed the little basket on the bathroom bench for the first time. Blinking in surprise, she sorted through it, realizing it must have been for her. There was a spare toothbrush, toothpaste, a hairbrush, a silk hair tie, face wash, and moisturizer. It looked like one of the luxury baskets students bought from one of the boutiques on Market Street, all the items packed with pale violet tissue paper and pressed pastel flowers. But Market Street was off limits to first and second year students. Still, it wasn't the first time one of the alphas had boasted connections with officials or older students. Guilt flooded her as she stared down at the basket, wondering if Theodore had paid money for it. The third, fourth, and fifth year students used popularity points to make purchases on Market Street, but Theodore was still a second year, which meant he wasn't accumulating popularity points yet. And he was from the settlements. He couldn't afford expensive gift baskets. Unfortunately, he was also incredibly stubborn and would be upset if she didn't use the things he had procured. So she showered using the products, dressed in his clothes, and crawled into his massive bed, burrowing into the sweet scent of him that clung to the pillows. She hadn't actually intended to fall asleep. She had been busy staring at her phone, wondering how she could convince Theodore to move to a couch or take his own bed and let her move to a couch. But she must have drifted off while deliberating, because she jerked awake when the screen lit up and it vibrated in her hands. Unknown.
Come outside.
She sat up, suddenly full of anxious energy. Her fingers tingled when she replied. Isabel.
Who is this?
Unknown.
Nico.
She stared at the screen in shock.
Nico?
The Nico who never spoke to her or looked her directly in the eyes for long? The Nico who seemed to avoid her like she was some sort of weird Sigma plague? Nico.
It's time for your initiation.
And suddenly it made sense, but not in a good way. She kicked her way out of the bed, pacing the floor nervously until she caught sight of something outside the window. No, not something. Nico Hart was standing right the hell there, 3 inches from the glass, all 6 foot something of him. His light green-brown eyes searched the darkness of the room before finding her, and then he cocked his head to the side, tucking a lock of hair behind his ear. His infectious smile was missing. It usually was around her. She gulped, kneeling on the window seat and cracking the window open a little. Like most of the other alphas, Nico intimidated the hell out of her. He was perfect heartthrob material with his tall, muscled body and easy athleticism, his smooth, light ochre skin, lips the color of cherries, and bleached blonde hair. He looked like he lived inside posters on the walls of teenagers all around the world. Sweat soaked and holding a football, a carefree grin on his face. He was the type girls and boys dreamed about, conjuring him outside their bedroom windows with a cocky smirk and eyes that dared them to brave the night as he swung the keys to an expensive, sporty car around his finger. But that wasn't the Nico she was faced with. This one was stony-faced and impatient, meeting her silent stare with his head still cocked. They were waiting each other out, seeing who would break the tense silence first. His eyes kept bouncing between hers, reminding her that she had taken out her contact, and he finally pressed his lips tightly together, glancing over the oversized shirt she wore.
"Are you going to come outside?"
he asked. "Not until you tell me where we're going." She inched back from the window.
"To the fitness center."
He stuffed his hands into his pockets, and she realized he was still dressed the same as he had been on the rooftop. He hadn't gone to bed yet. "I have a private lesson with Professor West tomorrow." She returned to the window, opening it a little wider. "I can't be out all night." He smirked.
"Probably best you work out any lingering aggression, then. You don't want to be bringing any of that shit into a lesson with Kaylin."
"Lingering aggression?" He rolled his eyes, pushing the window wide. He leaned into her face, lowering his voice to a whisper.
"I know it's in there somewhere."
"Only because you're causing it," she muttered, scrambling off the seat so fast she kicked her foot against something. But he wasn't trying to climb through. He was just leaning against the seat, waiting. He checked his phone and she saw the time flash on the screen. 2:33. She had to be up in a few hours, but it didn't look like Nico was leaving anytime soon. So she ducked back into the bathroom and swapped Theodore's boxers for her tights and shimmied her sports bra on underneath the big T-shirt. She added a contact and then slipped out of the window, Nico barely taking a full step back to make room for her.
"Come on,"
he said impatiently, already striding off. "This is really how you want to spend your Tuesday night?" she asked, hurrying behind him.
"What do you think?"
he grumbled, leading the way around the lake. "Holy damn," the guy walked fast, and somehow made it look like he wasn't even trying. She was almost running to keep pace. "I don't know," she answered distractedly, keeping her eyes on the ground so she wouldn't fall flat on her face in the dark.
"Let me tell you something the others won't, especially if you're really trying to get a room in Dorm A."
She stared at his broad back for a moment, lost in confusion before almost tripping on the first step leading down Alpha Hill, and then she returned her concentration to the ground.
"Oh, okay." "Too many alphas living together in one place will eventually start to force a hierarchy. I'm somewhere in the middle, and Oscar's third from the top. So when Oscar says that we all have to force you through an initiation, the only people who really get to ignore him are the alphas at the top of the chain. Not that they would have participated in the hazing anyway, since they're professors."
Isabel followed him the rest of the way in silence, mulling over that information. But most thoughts of alphas left her mind as they entered a room. The only thought that remained was how much bigger alphas were, and how much stronger, and every other reason she shouldn't get into a wrestling ring with one. "I don't think this is a good idea," she said flatly, staring at the roped boundaries.
"No shit."
He kicked off his shoes and ducked between the ropes.
"You know what else they won't tell you? They might not hang around the dorm gossiping all day, but there is someone they spill all their secrets to. They speak to me, Carter."
He notched his elbows on the ropes, leaning over to settle his stare on her.
"I know someone managed to throw you naked into the lake. I know your room was trashed. I know what was written on your wall. I know about the bomb and the blood shower. I know why Elijah is monitoring your room, and I know why Theo has you holed up in his room while he guards his door."
He paused then, looking amused.
"Pity he only thought about people trying to get in and not you trying to get out. But most of all..."
The amusement drained immediately out of his features, leaving them blank again.
"I know it isn't their job to look after you. but Elijah can't help himself. Bullying is a sore point for him. And Theo thinks he owes you his life. So that's where I come in.
He held up the rope, motioning her into the ring.
Your initiation is complete when you can break out of my hold in less than 3 seconds.
She considered him for a moment before blowing out a sigh. This almost looks like you're trying to help me, she said, towing off her sneakers and joining him in the ring.
I wouldn't thank me yet, he said dully. Now, tell me what happened the first time that Beta cornered you.
She froze, fear skittering down her spine. He really did know everything. He took me behind dorm B and tried to kiss me. Nico nodded, assessing her with narrowed eyes. His irises were the color of light moss crawling over rich brown bark, and standing as close as he was, she thought she could still smell whiskey on him. But he didn't look drunk. He looked impatient. Suddenly, he was advancing on her.
Whoa!
She skittered backward, but he kept coming, and then her arms were locked behind her back and her jaw was in his grip. The whiskey scent was stronger, dizzying almost.
Seriously?
He groused, releasing her.
That was too easy. Fight back, Sigma.
That sentence is an oxymoron, she complained, trying to hide the way she had begun to shake. Sigmas don't fight.
Bullshit.
He crossed his arms.
Imagine I'm the Beta.
You're too muscly. He's more rounded and bulky.
I said imagine.
2 seconds later, he had her cornered against one of the posts, her shoulders pushed back by his hands, his angry breaths huffing against the top of her head.
Stop making it so easy.
He wasn't as fast as you.
She tried to push him off her, but he didn't even twitch, and his muscles felt like stone beneath unyielding flesh. He eased back on her second push, and then stepped away from her entirely, moving off the platform and returning with a black strap.
Maybe this'll help,
he muttered, directing her by the shoulders to stand in the middle of the platform. He flicked the strap up over her eyes before she knew what was happening, and had it tied behind her head before she could duck away.
What is your ability?
She asked as he drew away, leaving her skin feeling oddly cold.
You're so freaking fast, even for an alpha.
I'm strong for an alpha, too.
He swept her feet out from under her, and she collapsed like a fragile tower of cards.
But my ability is more mental, like yours.
She pushed herself back up, standing on wobbly legs and pulling her arms up before her face, forming loose fists.
Surprised you'd admit to it, she huffed, awareness prickling all over her skin.
It was impossible to tell where he was standing.
Most alphas would get violent if someone compared them to a sigma.
He tugged on her ponytail, and she spun around, throwing out her fists, but he had already disappeared again.
Calling yourself weak is the only true weakness you'll ever have,
he declared, catching her around the neck and spinning her, slamming her backwards against his body.
If you're sure you can't do something, it just means you're trying the wrong way. There's more than one way to cross a river, but you just stand in the middle and wonder why you're drowning.
He spoke so calmly as she struggled in his hold, her breathing ragged as she battered at his iron grip with her fists and wriggled like a desperate animal caught in a snare. He didn't even seem to be breaking a sweat.
There's more than one way to get out of a bad situation.
He spun her again and forced a terrified squeak out of her throat as he grabbed her legs suddenly and hoisted her. She felt one of the ropes beneath her ass and one of his hands tugging on her hair, dragging her face against his. She could feel the graceful planes of his face, the sloping cheekbones and diamond-shaped jaw.
There's more than one way to beat someone.
He hadn't pulled her in to kiss her, only to whisper into her ear. But suddenly, she wasn't there with Nico. She was back in the chapel, shoved up against the dais, Crow's heavy body pushing her down, his hands pinning her arms. Everything went dark for a moment, and it wasn't the dark of the blindfold. It was all-consuming, flashing right through her brain, the sound of her own rasping breath drowning out all sense. She wasn't herself in that moment, but a memory come alive. A reaction that had taken human form to live like a shadow against her skin, ready to take over at any moment. Nico must have felt the change, because he suddenly whipped off the blindfold and set her on her feet. He took several steps backward, watching her wearily, but she took no notice of him, because she couldn't even breathe. She clawed at her chest, searching around with wide eyes before collapsing to the floor, hunched over as she desperately tried to draw in air. Oh, shit. Nico kneeled before her, hovering but not touching, his expression taut.
Carter, here.
He lifted her hands, holding them within her blurry eyesight.
Squeeze my hands. Focus on that. Good. Good girl. Squeeze harder. There you go.
His voice had dropped an octave, husky and deep, soothing and practiced. She squeezed his hands until her own hurt and the panic receded, filtering away to wherever it lived inside her body. Not gone, but subdued. She slackened her grip on his hands and he lowered them to her lap, but didn't release her, his thumbs rubbing slow, comforting circles against her skin. How did you? She trailed off, unsure how to phrase the question.
Someone I know.
He slipped his hands away, grazing his jaw. It was the first time she had seen his confidence waver. He even glanced quickly at the cameras. This was a topic he didn't want to discuss. Well, that was fine with her. I told you this wasn't a good idea. She stared down at her lap, twisting her trembling fingers together.
This is exactly why it's a good idea, he snapped. But we're done for tonight. When I call on you next time, you need to drop everything. If you try to ignore me or get out of this, I'll turn up wherever you are, pick you up, and carry you here myself. I know you're trying to get views, but I'm pretty sure it's not of your ass slung over my shoulder, right?
You're a dick, you know that? She slipped out of the ring and hastily pulled her shoes back on. He snorted, following her out of the door and shutting off the lights.
I'm a dick who could have picked something sadistic that didn't help you out at all. Which is what Oscar will do, by the way. So try not to complain about all the people in between me and him who actually don't want to torture you.
Oh, yeah? What about Moses?
Okay, you got me there.
He held up his hands in mock surrender. And Theo? She pressed, annoyed. Nico laughed outright, casting his eyes over her like he was assessing her in a whole new light.
Maybe you understand him better than I thought. But Theo would never break you. Test you, maybe. Break you? Never.
She swallowed, understanding the implication of what he was saying. Oscar and Moses might very well try to break her. And they might even succeed. Chapter 6. We Could Be Friends. Iz! Eve caught her elbow as she hurried toward fortune-telling and the mystic arts. I thought we were meeting for breakfast. I'm sorry. Isabel slowed, hitting her forehead. I ran over time while I was practicing this morning, and I had a mountain of laundry to do. I bet. Eve scowled, but refrained from going off on another angry rant over the blood incident. The sudden influx of messages the day before while Isabel had been cleaning had been enough. I noticed you skipped dinner as well, and your room was empty early this morning. My father got here last night. He's staying in the family center. He convinced the officials I needed extra support because of my situation. And last night I slept in Theo's room. Hold up! Eve's nails dug in as she came to a complete stop, her heels suddenly cemented to the floor. Say what now?
Well, my father...
Not about that! Although it is majorly cool that Bron Carter is here. You slept where?
She shook Isabel for good measure, so that Isabel's teeth clattered together when she tried to respond.
Theo was worried about people breaking into my room. Did he sleep in there with you?
Eve's baby blue eyes had grown wide as saucers, and she was whispering like the subject of Theodore's bedroom was a national secret.
No.
Isabel laughed nervously.
Of course not. Why do you sound like you're lying?
Eve drew back.
Well, I didn't really end up sleeping much. Nico made me sneak out. What?
Eve looked like she wanted to shake her again.
Nico? I didn't even know you were friends with him.
I'm definitely not. It wasn't like that.
Sato is making them all put me through an initiation. He said even if the officials give me a room in Dorm A, I still have to pass all their tests as well.
Sounds like Sato. Eve huffed out, but she still spoke Sato's name really quietly, like someone might report back to him that she was talking about him.
I told you to stay away from him.
What did he even do, anyway? Why is everyone so scared of him? Eve frowned.
I don't know. That just makes him even more terrifying, though. Like, whatever he does, he gets away with it, you know?
They parted ways when they reached Isabel's first class, and as soon as she stepped inside, the noise level dropped. People openly stared at her. It seemed that she was able to keep her head down and keep to herself in the corridors, but everyone in her first class had actually been waiting for her.
Hey, Carter!
An Omega boy tried to wave her over to a small group of his friends, but she caught sight of Ashford sitting at their usual spot, smirking at her, and she turned away from the Omega to sit in the chair opposite Ashford. His brows inched up in lazy acknowledgement, and she folded her arms, letting her gaze drift off to the side, until it twitched, annoyed, back to him. He stretched his legs out, jostling the legs of her chair.
"Morning, Sigma," he drawled.
"Don't you look fresh?"
She bit back her retort as Professor Vega entered the classroom, clapping her hands to get everyone's attention.
"Ah, Carter!"
she exclaimed, her gaze zeroing in on Isabel a little too fast.
"Welcome back. Now that you're here, I think we'll break up the pairs for the day and do something a little different."
Isabel glanced back to Ashford just in time to catch him smoothing out the annoyed look on his face, and she missed whatever else Vega said as he caught her eye and mouthed,
"You won't escape me that easily."
She scrunched up her nose, whispering back,
"I'm not trying to."
He leaned toward her, his boots jostling her chair again. He was wearing black Timberlands this time, and they were heavy enough to really jolt her.
"Lunchtime," he said, the words coming out somewhere between a promise and a threat. "I left you alone while you were in hospital, and I gave you time to come to me. But now your grace period is up."
She nodded stiffly, turning back to Vega just as all the other students stood and gathered around a crystal ball that she was setting up in the middle of the room. Isabel's brow pinched as she noticed the extra crew members gathering in the corner of the room, their cameras surveying the scene, not wanting to miss a single moment of whatever the hell was happening.
"Now," Vega proclaimed with excitement, "who wants to try first?"
"Try what?" Isabel whispered, turning back to Ashford. Except he was no longer sitting there. He had gathered up his bag and was already halfway across the room. He slipped out while everyone was distracted by Vega and the crystal ball. Not even the extra camera crew noticed.
"Carter!"
Vega pushed between two of the students, hurrying over to Isabel.
Why don't you come and stand in the center, since it's your mate we'll be trying to conjure?
She stilled, frowning at Ashford's empty chair.
Where is Ashford?
She asked, her voice turning suddenly sharp. One of the crew members swore, breaking away to leave the classroom, his steps hurried.
I don't know,
Isabel admitted, as Vega seemed to compose herself, plastering the smile back on her face and taking hold of Isabel's arm. She pulled Isabel over to the center of the circle, standing her beside the crystal ball.
Maybe you can try first,
She placed Isabel's hands around the cold sphere.
Just close your eyes and ask the question in your head. Who is my mate?
Vega seemed distracted, not really paying much attention to Isabel as she checked the door to the classroom. This whole thing had been set up for Ashford and Ashford alone. The Mystic Arts class was a joke, and everyone knew it. But Ashford's ability was real, and he had fled before they could use him to get a hint about Isabel's mate. The crew didn't seem to be able to track him down before the end of the class, and Isabel felt more than a little aggravated by the time she arrived at the gym for her small group session. Having 20 students